happening today. And I'm going to let Sarah and Michelle, of course, introduce our speakers. It's always it's a pleasure to work with them because they really think very, I don't know, they think very, not well, I don't know what the word is. They think about what we should be talking about all the time. They really are very dedicated affinity group chairs. And this idea came to us from one of you in the group. So Belinda, thank you. It seems like it was quite a good topic. Okay. So if anyone has topics, all you have to do is write us and we'll try to make it work. I'm going to stop talking and just tell you what I need to say, which is that the Network of Jewish Human Service Agency is having our annual conference virtually April 19th to the 22nd. Mark it down. We hope you all can come. There's going to be good pricing. It's not going to be that expensive. Agencies are going to get to pay for like 10 people to go or 5 people. We're not sure exactly, but something like that. And it'll be one price. And different agencies, I think, will have different prices depending on their budgets. Okay. With that being said, we really want to ask you all to think about topics that you can present at the conference. And we're having a special marketing and development program showcase, which is 5 slides, around 8 minutes to present what it is you want to say. So, for example, each one of you could have done this in the program showcase as well. We're doing it here, but you'd have a much bigger audience because people come from all over, not just the Jewish Human Services agencies, but a lot of the networking. You know, we're having the European Council, European Jewish Human Service agencies come, and a lot of other associations attend the conference. So please dig deep and think about it and put in a proposal. And they're due December 18th, which is doesn't give you a lot of time, but we'll probably extend it. But be thinking about it. Okay, that's my plug. Please submit something because the conference is only as good as what we get. There you go. Sarah, I guess, okay. Take it away. Oh, and the one thing, everyone change your name to write your community so we know where everyone's calling in from. Okay. That's it.
Sorry, I'm so sorry. I'm going to have to jump off. I just wanted to say goodbye, but you so feel free to continue the conversation.
Shado.
Okay.
Okay.
Everybody, if you're not speaking, if you want to mute yourselves, Lisa, or if you want to.
I did it.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, everybody, for being here today. Thank you to my wonderful co-chair, Michelle. And thank you to our presenters. Belinda, you brought up the topic of parlor meetings. And for many of us, parlor meetings are an important part of our cultivation, our fundraising, our stewarding. And we have had to do a 180 or 360 because of this pandemic. And so we thought we would discuss the topic and how we have been able to pivot and make it worthwhile, or what we're doing instead of holding in-person parlor meetings. So with that being said, we have Wendy Wilster from Boston, JFS in Boston. Wendy, give a hello. She's going to be presenting to us today about specific parlor meetings she had planned and how she changed them and how they were successful and why she did what she did. She'll be speaking first. Next, we have Amy Newman from JFS of Metro Detroit. Amy, say hello. She's going to be also speaking to us more from a stewardship perspective on parlor meetings, which is wonderful. Was that a fundraising piece of it too, Amy? Yes, well, she'll be telling us later. And then we will have Randy Lappin from JVS SoCal.
Right.
He's gonna be speaking last. In between everybody presenting, we're gonna have a little bit of time for some questions related to the presentation, and then we'll save some questions for the end as well before we have to end. So with that, Wendy, please take it over.
Thank you so much. So good to be on this conversation and to share what we experienced and what we learned. So I'm always told that I speak really fast when I speak, but you're all development folks, so you can just keep up with me. So last January, we had a new CEO start, and we wanted to roll her out and introduce her to our community, primarily our community of past board members and major donors. And so we created a series of receptions that we branded Inspired Gatherings. They were going to be in homes of some of our board members or VIP donors. We identified probably around 300 or so people who we really felt would be important for them to be among the first people to meet our new CEO. And we branded it Inspired Gatherings because we wanted it to be an interactive conversation. We wanted people to be inspired by our new CEO and to inspire her and each other by sharing their experiences with the agency. The first one was planned like the beginning of April. And so March 13th, when Massachusetts shut down, we still thought maybe we can have it, right? We all thought in the beginning this was going to be like a two-week kind of thing. And then obviously we couldn't. So we absolutely canceled the first one. But we really wanted to be able, we didn't want to miss an opportunity. You know, you only have a new CEO for like a year. So when it became really clear that we were not going to be able to gather in person, we decided to have two of the two virtual receptions. We asked the hosts to still serve as our hosts. We sent out, email saying, hey, we're doing this a little bit differently. We hope you will still participate. And we did a lot of follow-up through email and through phone calls. We really identified who were those, kind of top people who we really wanted to participate. Some of it was based on who were friends with the hosts. Some of it were based on who we had relationships with. And when I say we, it was myself, and I also have two frontline gift officers who are part of my team. So we definitely did quite a bit of follow-up. So for each of the receptions, we had about 20 people participate. So I'll kind of walk through them. So the host still served as hosts. And this was in the beginning, right? This was probably in May, and we were all kind of experimenting with Zoom. We use Zoom as a platform. We did not do anything fancy. So our people came on. Some people knew each other, some people didn't. We did not use the chat box, but some people were talking, nice to see you, how are you, how's your family, blah, blah, blah. The hosts introduced themselves. At this reception, one of the hosts was a board member and he had gotten to know our CEO, shared a little bit about the CEO. She spoke for about 20 minutes, shared her background, shared her enthusiasm for the work, and then asked people to share their JF and CS story. There was that awkward moment of silence. Fortunately, someone did share their story. There were two people in addition to the CEO who staffed this. I was one of the staff and I had an event person who was managing the hosting. This was kind of way back when no one knew how to let someone in from a waiting room. So we've progressed a little bit, but it was really good to have someone who was not part of the program. And it was also really good to have someone who was facilitating the actual conversation, right? Because people, it's awkward, right? To be able to say like, I'll go next. So in certain cases, I would kind of say, oh, Joel, you were board chair during the 80s. Share with us some of your recollections from that time. Or, you know, to someone else, you've been a visiting mom volunteer for so long. Share with us what's been inspiring to you. So I really did kind of serve in that role of facilitator, inviting people to share their stories. Not everyone spoke. And I was also really sensitive, kind of trying hard to watch people's body language, but also for people who I didn't know too well, I did not want to kind of push them to share their story. So I would say maybe 80% of the people spoke. And our CEO had kind of responded and there were a couple of questions. We kept it to 60 minutes. We did not go over 60 minutes. And I think timing is really, really important on Zoom. What was really surprising to me was that it felt warm. You know, there's nothing like being in someone's home, right? You have that kind of warmth, you have that hospitality. And because it was limited to 20 people, everyone was just on one screen. So you were able to see everyone who was participating. And the hosts really set the tone. It was interesting because they had kind of situated their screen so that they were sitting in front of their beautiful fireplace. And you kind of felt like you were in the exact same space where you would have been if you were in their family room. A couple of other things, we did hand deliver very, very small hospitality gifts for both of these, like little succulents or, you know, I think like a little plant, like very inexpensive, but just a looking forward to seeing you, giving the Zoom information. And we also did send a day of email reminder. We also did quite a bit of follow-up for all of the participants. And the follow-up was inviting our guests to have a one-on-one Zoom meeting with our CEO. So everything was really focused still around our CEO and around building relationships with our CEOs, with our new CEO. And so the second one was really similar. It was a little bit more geographically based. And so people did know each other. Some people were closer to the organization than others. But I think it was very meaningful. For the people who did not participate, and again, we had a very specific audience that we were looking at, who we really wanted to feel special and get to know our new CEO, we did follow up with phone calls and emails inviting them to have a one-on-one meeting with our CEO. We have found that Zoom has broken down a lot of barriers, and our CEO has met with more than 100 people during this pandemic. So I know that we're very fortunate that she's really understands that a large part of her role is also engaging with and connecting with our donors. And, you know, again, there's nothing like she's like our bright, shiny object. And there's been a lot, obviously, to talk about the work that we're doing. So we were really pleased. I mean, it's not the same as being in person, but I do think that you can create a community on a Zoom platform. And I didn't know if we'd be able to be successful in that, but we pulled it off. So, and then I'll just say, as we look ahead, we are not having our annual spring benefit. We are launching Leadership Giving Societies, and our plan is to have a virtual reception for each of our five societies. So we will be using a Zoom platform for the near future of our continued donor gatherings.
Terrific. Does anybody have any questions that they want to ask Wendy?
Hi, this is Judd from Chicago. Thank you, Wendy, for the presentation. Very helpful. I was actually, you just ended by saying you're launching the Leadership Giving Societies. That's funny. We're debating, we're planning on launching donor giving communities similar to Leadership Giving Societies. And it was part of our current campaign plan, but now we're thinking of delaying the launch until after the pandemic because we're worried about launching it virtually when a lot of it's about building community amongst our donors. But it sounds like you're still going ahead. I'm just curious to hear a little bit more about your thinking and your approach to it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been thinking for a while that our major donors would give to JF&CS if we had an event or not. And this is just a really good opportunity for us to pivot away from events. You know, I think again, because we were really successful with these gatherings, we've actually seen a higher attendance with our board meetings and our committee meetings. I think that many, at least what we're finding in Boston, many nonprofits are still doing virtual events and are still having, you know, a few hundred people participate. I do think these parlor meetings are a little bit meatier. They're more substantive. You know, we can really have conversations, right? You can't have a conversation on a Zoom with 300 people. So we are definitely finding, and I think every community is different. In Greater Boston, we are finding that I worry about Zoom fatigue, but hopefully because this is gonna be so niche, we're gonna have some thought leaders from the agency. We're going to try it. I mean, we're all trying this for the first time, right? But we don't want to delay it until we can be in person. And again, I think we found that people can connect, you know, over a Zoom platform.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Wendy, I just had another question. Is there any kind of list of questions that you could share with us? Or was it really just the one question of tell your story and your connection to JFCS? Was that the only?
Oh, Thank you, Beth. It's such a great question. We did not send a question ahead of time. We had thought about it. We wanted originally for it to be a bit more of a Jeffersonian type of dinner. And we kind of pivoted away from that. So we kept it very vague. I wish that we could have. And I also think that the pandemic really changed it, because so much of what we were talking about was how Jay Afencios was responding in those early days. So it was really just an overall, but we had come up with different questions that we had been prepared to send out before the events. I wish that we could have done that.
I just wanted to say, someone was talking about it, Wendy, to your point, I think my very first social work supervisor in Boston told me, this is 32 years ago, that every small group is a gift. And I think that's really true, especially when you are trying to connect with people and raise money. I think that's a real opportunity. It's not a disincentive, rather it's an incentive.
Before we go on to having Amy speak with us about her experience, Wendy, I heard you say that there were about 20 people on each of the parlor meetings. We were discussing or talking about trying to find that sweet spot. Would you say that that was the proper number of people? Could it have been that you could have had more or less?
I think that this is only my personal opinion. I think the sweet spot is one screen, right? Where everyone who's on the Zoom can see each other, right? So we've got two screens here, which is awesome, but it's harder to have a conversation. So again, that's really hard to manage, right? Because I don't think today you want to turn anyone away, but it was very nice that it was really like we were literally in the same room, even though we were on a screen, instead of having to go back and forth to screens.
Thank you. Elaine, I think, I don't know where you are. Did you have a question? Ellen,
yeah.
Thanks. Elaine, yes, from Birmingham.
Hi, and I don't want to take too much away from the topic of today, but I would love to know more about the giving societies. So maybe I should follow up, or if you've got any information about how those are structured, I would love to have that.
I was hoping Wendy might be able to present that at the on the program showcase, how to do that. I already texted her that.
I'm happy to try. We're rolling it out. So, we'll see how it goes. But Elaine, if you want to send me an email, I'm happy to connect.
All right. Ellen. Thank you so much.
Ellen had something to say too.
Oh, who else?
Ellen also.
Ellen.
Thank you. I have just a short question. The hospitality bags, you mentioned a small house plant. Do you recall what else you may have had in those bags?
It was just that. I mean, literally a little succulent in a little clay pot in a hospitality bag. I mean, honestly, I didn't even see them. I mean, this is kind of the wacky thing. At the time, I still had an event consultant, and she's like, oh, I'm going to do this. They're really cheap, okay? I'm like, okay, that sounds great. So it was just a nice touch. It was a very nice touch and very inexpensive.
Nice. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Wendy. Amy, you're up.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Sarah and Lisa and Michelle, for inviting me to share today. I'm Amy Newman. I'm the Chief Development Officer at Jewish Family Service of Metro Detroit. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about an event that we had in the summer as a replacement for an event that we had to cancel. So it's a little bit similar to what Wendy did and a little bit similar to what Randy's going to talk about. It's a little bit of a hybrid. But every year in the spring, we have an event, which is our big annual event, and it's our biggest fundraiser of the year. And it's called the Spotlight Event. And this year, like everyone else, we found ourselves in the spring saying, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? So the first thing we did was we rescheduled it, thinking that we would be able to bring in our speaker for October. And you know, in June, we recognized that was not going to be the case. And so we decided to figure out how we could sort of wrap up the year and put a bow on it. We knew that we didn't want to just flat out cancel the event and not have any contact with our donors. So the first thing that we did was we called all of our donors by phone, and the CEO and I took some of the list, and our co-chairs took some of the list as well to call their friends. And we reached out one-on-one to all of the donors and thanked them for their sponsorship and shared with them how disappointed we were that we were having to cancel the event, but told them that we were working harder than ever before to, you know, ensure the security of those that we serve, and could we retain their gift. And everyone, to our great pleasure, said, yes, you can keep our gift, except for one couple that I think was in financial hardship themselves and, you know, sheepishly asked if we could refund it, which we were more than happy to do. But we were just blown away by the generosity of people still letting us keep their dollars with, you know, no event. Sort of like Wendy said, some people are really giving to the agency because they care about the work that we're doing and the people that we're serving. So we wanted to say thank you to them in a way that was really personal. So when we called everyone and asked them if we could retain their gift and thank them for their sponsorship, we let them know that we would be putting together some sort of Zoom call in the month of July, and stay tuned. We'll keep you posted with more information. So after all of those calls were made, we sent an email following up with everybody. And then we scheduled this Zoom call for the month of July. And we wanted to make it short and sweet and really to the point, but we wanted it to have impact. So this Zoom appreciation party was fold. It was to thank our co-chairs who had helped us secure the close to $235,000 that we raised for this event without having an event. And we also wanted to share stories of impact of people that we had served in the COVID crisis. And our CEO spoke, you know, he's been speaking to so many people recently about what are you doing, or, you know, kind of giving an update on the agency and the work that we're doing. So he spoke, and these people really felt like they had an opportunity to hear firsthand from the CEO about the work of Jewish Family Service. So we had this event in the evening around 5:30. We asked people to bring a cocktail if they wanted to log on a few minutes early, but we started promptly at 5:30 and we ended right like around 6 o'clock. So it was short and sweet and to the point. We did send a reminder email the week before letting people know again about the event, and we asked them to register so we could kind of get a head count of how many people were gonna be in the Zoom room with us. And we sent a reminder the day of as well. And we were a little bummed out because our numbers were kind of low. And then of course, you know, the day of when you send a reminder, 10 people signed up. And then a couple people just showed up in the Zoom room as the event was going on. So I would say all told, we had between 30 and 40 people there, and we had invited approximately between 70 and 80. So we felt like we had a really nice turnout. We did see some people that we had never, you know, had an event before or seen before because they were friends with our co-chairs and they had sort of brought them on board. And they sort of went above and beyond and tied it back to, you know, she talked about how her dad came to this country and they were, you know, very poor, and he sold neckties on the street to make money. And then now you look around Detroit and his name is on so many buildings in our community. So she shared his story of coming from nothing and realizing that once he had this ability to give back, that he would, and that that's been a value that's been instilled in their family. So it was just this beautiful story. It personalized and brought to life her family and the legacy that they left. So that was one sort of nice piece of it. And then since then, we were so inspired by her speech and her husband's speech that it's really her story, her family story, but they go together. So we asked them to make a video. And so they've made a testimonial agency video telling that story again, which we will use at the end of December, you know, to close our campaign this year. And it talks about, you know, giving and the importance of giving. And it's just a really beautiful piece. The other thing I will say is that in addition to, you know, having these people come together in the Zoom room, we wanted to sort of do something to surprise them that they wouldn't be expecting. So we sent a box of cookies to everyone's home that were delivered the day of the event. And I think actually that might have been a reminder for some people that the event was taking place. So we got really lucky that the timing worked out. I think people went to the mailbox and said, oh gosh, that's tonight. You know, it had a personalized note in it from us. And we put our logo on the box and they were all, you know, packaged beautifully. So everybody came to the meeting going, thanks for the cookies. I'm eating them now. And it just kind of, you know, warmed up the room a little bit. So while we didn't do it to raise money, it certainly was a way that I think we were able to make our donors feel special and steward them in such a way that hopefully they'll give again in the future. And for many of them to get to hear from our CEO and to hear from our co-chairs firsthand, I think was just a really nice touch. Again, people are looking for ways to connect. People are looking for ways to feel like, I feel so helpless. I'm in my home. How can I make a difference? How can I make an impact? And we were able to give that to them and show them, not only are you making a difference, but look around you. These are the people that are part of your community doing it with you. So that's really it for you know, what I wanted to share. So if there's questions, I'm happy to take them.
Amy, before we take some questions, if there are some out there, I wanted to just bring up something that you raised earlier, and I'm not sure if I missed it this time, but you had mentioned to me how another benefit for doing this was having it have been an event. You wanted to sort of complete the event and tie it up with a bow so that you could move forward and nobody would expect next year that they're dollars or their sponsorship would be need, you know, able to be postponed and used for the following event. And I think that was a really important point in terms of finishing, completing something and making it clear that it's done. And now you move on to the next.
Right. So there's one small piece to this. A small detail is that our speaker that we had is a comedian and he does not want to do a virtual event. He only wants to come in person and do it live. So when we had to cancel, he rebooked with us for the year 2022. So we didn't want people to feel like, wait, I already paid for that gig when we have it again. So we really wanted to consciously, like you said, wrap up this year, put a bow on it. If people want to sponsor when we bring him in again, God willing, in 2022, it's a separate year. It's a separate sponsorship. So, yeah.
Terrific.
Are there any other questions?
Does anyone have questions?
I just had one other question, Amy. Did you, for the stories of impact, did you pre-record them? Like, was that a video clip that you shared, or did those people share the stories live?
So we very rarely use clients in person for our testimonials or for sharing stories. So what I did is I went to our family support services staff and said, share with me stories that you have of recent people that you've served. And we put some together and I gave that, we changed their name to preserve their identity. And we gave them to a couple of our board members and they read the stories. So that was how we shared their story of people that we were serving.
Thank you, Amy. Does anyone ever have any other questions for Amy before we move on to Randy? Elizabeth, was that a raised hand? No, okay.
So I just wanted to say, Dana said something about the comedian that you're having on your event. You had him film the show with a live audience of 39 Zoom. Whoops,
yeah.
I don't know what that is. But do you want to just mention that briefly?
Yeah, so we have our big benefit next Saturday night, and we also have a comedian every year, and he agreed to, we didn't want him to do the show that night with like no audience. So he's literally performing to a screen. So we, with our production company, we invited 39, because I think that's what number of tiles you can fit on the screen, of our donors, fund, you know, so people might've been with a family or had, you know, their teenage kids there or whatever. So there was more people in the pictures and they were literally the audience for him. And so there was a live laugh track. He is performing for somebody and that's going to be part of that will be the show.
It's a good idea.
So Right. We worked it out that way.
I don't know if any of you are on Boca Raton's mailing list, mm-hmm. Ruth Rails. Have people seen, they have Jason Alexander every once in a while. He, you know, comes along and says, you know, come on, join the fun. That's really amazing. I wonder how that'll be successful. Anyway, that's not a parlor meeting. That's a big event. So we're going off track. My fault.
Okay. Anybody else? All right, Randy, take it away.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. I apologize for the lighting. It's the early morning here. It's 10:30, but the sun's going to hit any minute. So let me move quickly here. So my what I'd like to talk about is sort of a hybrid of what you've heard. So this started out as me in the last 8 months just calling our donors and checking in on them. It was not my intent to bring up JVS. Each and every time, almost to the T, they brought it up before I did. How are you guys doing? How are you pivoting? Are you seeing clients? Are you safe? So I thought, how can we take this rifle experience, me just calling donors one by one, how can we take that and expand it to a broader audience? So our CEO, Alan Levy, has done a great job with what he calls town hall meetings with our staff. We have 250 staff in 25 different offices, and we have done virtual town hall meetings just to keep everybody in touch with one another and where the agency is going. And I thought if we could take that sort of format and adapt it to our donors, and it would be an address from our CEO. And it really, in my mind, it was just a thank you and a stewardship move. It was not going to be a fundraiser. We have lots of year-end activities. We've had two very successful virtual events that far exceeded our goals and actually raised more money and cost less than our brick and mortar events, which is a whole other subject. So we also have a year-end appeal to our LiveBunt mailing list. So I didn't want to go after some dollars. The thought was with Giving Tuesday around the corner on December 1st, and we don't do big dollars on Giving Tuesday, but if we don't do it, I hear it from board members. Hey, my temple did it. Everyone's doing it. I didn't see JVS doing it. So we do it. Maybe we get $2,000. It is not a big push. Everybody and the mother is raising a dollar the same day. And it started out as a great idea. And that's a whole nother topic as well. So we thought on December 1st, the evening of at 6 p.m., we would have our CEO address our donors on a webcast. It would not be a Zoom call. We would have him just bring everybody up to speed where the agency has been, how important their partnership has been during these challenging times. We would present some program leaders talking about their individual programs that are heavily supported by donors. And then we'd have two clients speak sort of what I call mission moments. And I realize that many on the call cannot use their clients as testimonials. I understand that. But like Amy had mentioned, we have done index cards in the past with stories of our clients where we have had our board members read them one by one, becoming that client. And it's very moving and touching. So that was the intent, just a stewardship, a thank you, an update, and wishing everybody a happy and healthy holiday season. We brought it to our development committee. And what they said is, you're probably going to come short of goal this year. You're very silly not to have some sort of an appeal. You won't get that moment back again. And that's usually my mantra. So it's unusual for me not to want to ask people for money. So it's one of those, if you ask somebody their opinion and you don't use it, you're going to hear about it. So what we did to compromise is during the client's message, and those are pre-taped, the client's talking about their story before JVS and since, on the lower third of their screen along the bottom part, we are going to have a text to give opportunity. It's very low key. We're not looking to raise significant dollars, but we need to satisfy the development committee, and a dollar, you know, today is more than you had yesterday, theory. When we look back, and again, we've been very busy this season with activities, we thought if we're really not going to push Giving Tuesday and everybody is doing it the same day, why not we go the following week on December 9th and we'll just put a mention of Giving Tuesday on an e-blast along with a Thanksgiving message, and we'll put something on the website and that'll be it. And then we'll follow up with this address on the following Tuesday, December 9th. And that is what we're gonna do. We're billing it as a message of gratitude, your donations at work. And again, it's just demonstrating impact and how we've been nimble and adaptive and how we've been deemed essential service providers. Our work must continue. And that is the plan. I've been asked, well, how many people do you think you're gonna get on the to view this? I said, I don't know. We're going after roughly 2,000 of our donors, including our Libunt list. And if I get 50 to 100, I'll consider it a win. I don't think you can thank people enough. And to some of the points that has been raised here today, I find it that people are hungry for connectivity. They want to connect with people. And I think it would behoove all of us to take advantage of them being at home for the most part. They don't need to travel. They don't have to get their hair done and find a parking space or whatever the challenges have been in the past. Our events have shown a higher attendance by hundreds than we normally would. So I'm not looking for huge numbers. We are going to record this and it will be on our website, and we may push it out again if you happen to miss our CEO saying thank you, however we're going to term that. Here's another opportunity to view the message of gratitude. I think that was about the gist of it. Happy to answer any questions that you might have. And now the sun is beating on my
head. Linda? Well, thank you so much, Randy, for sharing that. And really, thanks to all of you and Amy and Wendy. A lot of this is what we've been talking about at Albert JFS. I think you've met Kelly Whiter, our new chief development officer. So we've been in conversation about these types of parlor meetings, how we can do virtual events. And I think our biggest question is, what about the ask? And I think that, Randy, you were kind of addressing that now, is that you had sort of initiated your event, your program is not necessarily directly for fundraising. It's something that we've been talking about, is that if we're doing sort of small gatherings, and I think was it Amy or Wendy was saying, like, just to keep it to the number of people on a screen, I think that's what we're trying to do also. We've been talking about, do we have the hosts make the ask? Do we have our CEO or CFO or somebody making an ask? And so, you know, I sort of maybe asked the panel, have you had good experience with making an ask virtually?
We have had, as I mentioned, we've had two events. We have an annual woman-to-woman conference that we normally get 550 women into a local venue here, and it's a sellout, and they raise about $300,000 to $400,000 for our programs that primarily serve women. We also have an annual luncheon that has been a dinner now the last 2 years. And again, we get about 400 people in the room, and we do about the same amount of numbers as the women do. We switched our luncheon completely to a local newscaster here, weathercaster Fritz Coleman, who's been a good friend of ours. And we did a virtual comedy event. Some of you have mentioned comedy. And during the event, we did an appeal. We did a text to give. We were very successful in attendance. We monitored, we did it on YouTube, on Facebook, and through our website. It was pre-recorded, except for Fritz. He was the beginning and he was the end. The middle portion with the comedians were pre-taped, either from their live shows in the past or they did something from their home, and we put in some laugh track. The women's conference was just held last week, and they raised $540,000 and spent a third of what they would have spent, had 800 people at one point online watching. I think people want to help. I think people want to be part of the solution. And I think that if we don't ask during this time of crisis, it's a lost opportunity. They're almost expecting an ask, knowing how important the work is that we all do. That's been my experience.
So I'll add something on that. because we pivoted our women's breakfast last spring from live to in-person, we raised about the same amount. We always raise, you know, around 250-ish. We usually walk into the room around 200. So the bulk of what our goal was already raised before the event started. Typically, we will raise about $75,000 in the room. We did have an ask online. We only raised about $20,000 in the room. So I think there's a distinction, you know, between if you're having a virtual event, asking for sponsorships, some of that might be the same, right, with a virtual event. I have not seen many organizations have a lot of success when they're doing the ask during the virtual program. What I will say is that people are home and they want to be connected. And we have had more donor meetings in the past 8 months than we have had previously. You know, people are responding either beforehand or afterward to have conversations about giving. And I think it's just a surprisingly, you know, we've just had so much success in being able to cultivate and solicit and steward our donors on this like weird virtual platform. But I think the ask is very different when you're on a screen than in the room where you see your friends, you know, filling out a pledge card. I think it's very different. I don't know, Randy, you know, what your experience was with in the room giving versus what you had raised beforehand.
Yeah, no, it's a very good point. You know, that peer-to-peer pressure, that nudging of the elbow to your table mate, hey, come on, you're missing that, no question. But I think that one of the things that we've done consistently is tried to find a match. So if we can get to $50,000, we have a $50,000 match, we'll raise another $100,000 for our mission. Or any amount of the match, whatever it might be. I think that's a motivator, but yes, it is quite different than being in the room. That's why sponsorships and as much pre-sale as you can is important. And we promise them benefits a little bit different than, of course, there's no table signage. There's, you know, some of the things that you normally would be able to provide. We provide in social media. So we give brand recognition or name recognition in posts, press releases, on our website, at the beginning or at the end of the show, depending on the level, if it's a significant gift, a presenting sponsor, there's actually a mention from the host or hostess at the beginning of the show with gratitude and thanks to the ABC company for this evening's program. So there are ways to still give donor recognition and some benefits. They're just different.
Randy, we have a question from Lene in Houston. Did your names on the screen help you or help?
Yes. So we use a company called Mobile Cause as a text-to-give platform. We've gone through a few. Their processing fees are extremely nominal, and they've been very helpful. It's an easy-to-understand platform. They will help you if you need it. It's a thermometer gauge, like some of the others, and you can choose to have the donor's name appear on the screen as a scroll, and you can choose to have the amounts shown or not shown. So far, each time we've done this, and we've done it now, it's got to be 5 or 6 years, we have chosen to include the donor amount. And it actually, when we had our in-person events, it was a lot of fun because people were getting the hang of it very quickly, and before we could explain the instructions, up came the names already. And we had things like handsome man at table 9, you know, $250. And they'd stop the program and they'd say, hold it, bring up the lights. Who's the handsome guy at table 9? And we had fun with it. And within 10 or 15 minutes, we raised another $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. It was actually fun. So that we try to continue that on a virtual environment.
Randy, what is the name of that program again? Would you mind repeating it, please?
Sure. It's Mobile Cause, C-A-U-S-E.
I was just asking Jody to put it in the chat. Yeah, that's interesting. And did people, they had to, the number was, it said text this to donate, and that's what
you get a number, and then you put in a word that is open or available. So, you know, I think when we did the comedy event, it was fun. Text 41144 or text fun to 41444. Mm-hmm. And then you put in, it sends you a text message with a link. You can make a pledge right there. It takes you to our website. Yeah. There's different ways to do it.
Very cool. Susan from Jacksonville, Randy, asked, do you have a video of your event?
Yes, I'll make sure that the group gets the link. I'm sure they're on our website. I know the Women's Conference is, and we have a YouTube channel, so it's all there, but I'll make sure that Lisa gets the information.
Terrific. Thanks, Randy. Does anybody have any other questions for any of our three presenters today before we close?
Yes, I actually do have a question. So Belinda, thank you again for raising this very, very important issue to the group. And it's wonderful to hear from colleagues across the country on how you're addressing this unusual time and taking advantage maybe of some opportunities that have presented themselves. So we actually have virtual programs that are for the wider swath of the community that we're doing. And we've set them up. We have two that we're doing, and we've set them up without couverts, and instead we have a fundraising drive, a goal for the combined for the two virtual events. One is coming up on December 3rd. It's our Holocaust benefit. And we've already raised, actually, our goal for the two events is $360,000, and we've already raised about $150,000, and we're not even at the first event. So it's nice, and the thermometer, we have Donor Perfect. So we're using this is the first time we're ever doing it. We're using their text to give. When we have the virtual program, it'll come up. I mean, we'll see. We've never done it before. We're hoping it's going to go well. But part of the impetus, though, for Belinda in bringing this issue to the group is we're trying to figure out for the small group parlor meetings, when we used to be in someone's living room with five couples. You know, we'd be in person and the host would bring five of their couple friends and we'd do some kind of a talk, and it would be absolutely a fundraiser. And it would be a major gift fundraiser. I mean, we're talking about five-figure giving and up at these intimate parlor meetings. That's kind of what we're trying to figure out. Should we, could we, how do we do that in this time? Would people respond to that? Would anyone show up for that? Would we raise money for that at a parlor meeting such as that? That's what we're trying to grapple with. Has anyone, I've appreciated hearing the stories and the examples of what you all have shared, but I haven't heard that yet, like that anyone has had an experience doing something like that. So does anyone have any thoughts about it, if you've done it or if not? You know, just any thoughts that you want to share about that?
So this is Lene in Houston, and our staff, our CDO, Rachel Davis, I don't know if she's on. She did the last meeting, but Rachel and one of our other team members, Tiffany, have been having family parlor meetings. So they've been reaching out and doing multi-generational family meetings and asking our givers that traditionally are 60 and above, if they will include their family members. And they've been setting up times where they will meet, usually on a Sunday afternoon. Their adult children and sometimes their parents get on the call, and they do a discussion about why our lead donors, for example, Jay and Carolyn, why they give to JFS and why it's important for them, and make sure that their children understand their intentions. And then they usually bring their parents into the conversation by saying, I did this because my mom did this. And so it's been a really good way of doing it. Almost every time the adult children, they may not even be local, ask to be added onto our newsletter, our monthly newsletter that goes out. And they usually will also make a donation in honor of a specific program that we're having, or in honor of their own parents. And so we've done that. I think they've done at least one a month for the last 3 or 4 months. And they said they've been getting really, really good discussions going on, and that the children have even sent them letters. Thank you for facilitating this. I didn't realize how important this was to my parents. And so it didn't necessarily spread it to new donors, but it may continue that family lineage of donations to our agency, even if those kids are outside of the area.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you,
Lene. Yeah. Kelly, I suggest if you'd like to reach out to Rachel Davis or Lene to get more information. It might be a little different than what you're hoping to do, but I do think it will be helpful. And I remember Rachel mentioning how successful that was for her in terms of fundraising.
I think, I think we have to acknowledge, like, this is the world that we're living in for the really unforeseeable future. And I think a lot depends on the culture of your own community and your donors. And if you have donors who are willing to serve as your host and to invite their friends, I would really kind of look at it just like, you know, if they were asking their friends, you know, to spend an evening in their home, that they would host it and they would invite their friends to participate. I think it really depends on who those donors are, what the issue is, you know, that you're asking them to raise money. When we've done parlor meetings with an ask, it has been for a very specific program, not unrestricted. So I would just treat it the same way. And if you have donors who are willing to serve as the host and inspire their friends to join them in supporting your work, I just say go for it, because we can't stop, right? We have to continue. We have to be adapting and pivoting, but we have to continue to share what our need is. And I just don't think we can wait for some, you know, miracle date that no one can really say. I don't know about across the country, but at least here in Boston, there are a lot of organizations that are not even thinking about going back to their offices until June. And the sentiment is that people are not going to want to gather together, at least through the spring and early summer.
I agree. We had a date on hold for next year of June 16th for that luncheon or dinner event. I mentioned it. We're going to push it to September, because if you think about it, even if it were okay to get together in June, you've got to make a decision to go or no go 3 months before that to do your invitations and your lists and all of that. And it, with the vaccinations, who knows what's going to happen. So we pushed it to September, hoping that that'll be okay. And we're going to stay in a virtual environment, to your point, Wendy. The other thing I'll say is, and I'll share this as it develops, our organization is going to be 90 years old next year, and our scholarship program will be 50 years old in 2022. So we are putting together a, what some call a capital campaign, but when I mention capital campaign, everyone goes, oh, you're going to build a building. It's not a building. So I'm calling it a capacity building campaign. We typically will see pre-COVID 50,000 people come through our doors, and we expect at least a 20%, if not more, increase. And in order to meet that need, we've got to build up our infrastructure and our capacity. So that is what the campaign is going to be about. And we're going to have to do it virtually. In some cases, we'll meet donors socially distanced, but it's going to be interesting. We've never done this before.
So I would think you'd want to do these virtual parlor meetings for a capacity building campaign. I'm sure it would have at least 7, if not 8 figures attached to it.
Yeah. And I think one of the first things we're going to do is a kickoff event. Once we select and we've got buy-in for the campaign committee, my suggestion is that we do a Zoom kickoff event and thank everybody, let them know how important this campaign is, what the impact is going to be, basically the case for support. And yes, it's got to have some sort of virtual parlor aspect to it to keep it going.
I don't want to cut everybody off. This is so interesting, but I know I'm cautious of the time. So I just wanted to say thank you so much. And speaking of 2021, this is actually our last meeting in 2020. So we were going to be gathering again in January 12th of 2021. And thank God we're all over the country and the network always was virtually. So we're always in Zoom. We're in our regular mode here, right? In our Zoom world. And so I think this was great and really thank you. I think we should keep the conversation going. I don't know. I don't think we all use the network's Facebook groups enough to kind of have these conversations. I think it would be nice to be able to continue the conversation that way. Also, the people sharing what you're doing. And then January 12th, if you have topics that you are interested in, let Sarah and I know, and we will gather then. Hopefully it will be a better year and we'll have vaccines and promise of in-person gatherings. So thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. and Sarah for your leadership. I just wanted to say, if anyone wanted to touch base with anyone privately, you know, the emails are in the invitation, so you can find who you're looking for through that invitation. And I can send the Facebook, you're going to be getting something from me, and I'll include the Facebook, how to join the Facebook group as well. Okay. And if you have anything you want to send that we can put in the development professionals affinity group resource file, send me that and I'll put it in there. Randy's going to send me the link to the fundraiser. So thank you all. I know people are leaving. Next year, we're only having 50-minute meetings, so we don't have everyone dropping off and we can all run to the bathroom before our next meeting. That was my
happy idea. And healthy new year, everybody.
Happy and healthy.
Thank you.
Happy
and healthy.
Celebrate.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Michelle. Bye. Bye.